find a seat. Go ahead and do that.
Full house. Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming, everybody.
Forks.
We're
going to
sit down.
I think I'm sitting.
No problem. Welcome to Owl's Nest Books, everyone. I'm Sarah. I'm the events manager at the bookstore, and I'm just delighted to have a full nest tonight for this very special event. But we're going to begin in a good way, in alignment with our individual and collective responsibilities as treaty peoples, and in our shared tradition of storytelling. Acknowledgement is owed to the nations whose territories we operate in, the Blackfoot Confederacy, Siksika, Kana Piikani, Amskabi Piikani. We are also located within the boundaries of the Treaty 7 Nations signed on September 22, 1877. In addition to the Siksikate Satapi are the First Nations, Iarhe Nakoda, Goodstoney, Chiniki, Bearspaw, and the Tsuut'ina Nation. Let us also recognize the connection and autonomy of the Métis Nation Region 3 within the Northwest Métis homeland. Thank you. And now I am going to turn it over to esteemed poet and longtime friend of the Nest and your host for the evening, Richard Harrison.
Thank you very much, Sarah. And thank you all for coming. This has been in the making for, well, you'll find out, quite a while. And to have you all here to share this with the Alexander Writers Center, with the publisher of the book, and of course with Carl, one of my favorite poets, is a real treat to spend this. I have a few people I want to thank personally. A couple of the Carl's fellow poets, dear friends, Rosemary Grebel in the back there, and Bob Stallworthy provided cover blurbs for the book, which is always a great thing that a writer can do for another writer. My daughter, Emma Harrison Rouleau, right about the middle there, designed the cover for it. And the executive director for the Alexander Writers Center, who is launching us into the first publication by a single author under their imprint, Robin Van Eck. So, I am going to, it's my job now to introduce Carl to a group of people whom I think most of whom already know him. But I'm going to go anyway. It is my great pleasure to introduce Carl Swoboda, who is here at 81 years old to launch his first book of poetry.
Yay. Yeah.
Born in Puyallup, Washington, is that right?
Puyallup,
Washington. Carl has lived in Canada since 1970 and been an engineer, mountaineer, hiker, and canoeist. He's got a BA in archaeology and has run for the provincial legislature as a Green Party candidate for 3 elections. Closest to his heart, he is a husband, father, and grandfather. For us, though, in and through these poems, Carl is a reverent and sometimes irreverent elder speaking the holiness of life to us, the new owners of the house. When such a voice says to us, of all things both now and soon to be in our power, take care of them, we listen. Carl Swoboda.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Richard, for the nice introduction. I also want to thank Richard for the consistent help he's given me over the years with this, both in guiding me along the path of being a better poet, along with the rest of the Thursday group. And also for his services as editor to this book and my guide through the process of publishing, which I still don't think I quite understand. But, I'm just grateful for everybody here tonight. I'm pleased to have my whole family here, children, grandchildren, wife, son-in-law. So and a lot of friends too, and fellow poets. So, yeah, like you said, I've been working on this for a while. The book is really kind of, well, it's autobiographical, and it's mostly factual, a little poetic license of wording, things here and there, but, you know, after all, we're not reading The Economist here. So, as he said, I was born in the United States, and I grew up there. And I started early, you know, hiking out in the mountains with my dad. And it's kind of stuck with me the rest of my life, and that and other outdoor adventures that I've been going on from time to time. And as Richard mentioned, I was educated and as an engineer, and you know, I've been working at that. But let's get to the poetry. I'll start with one. It's about one of my early hikes. It's called the Ipsit Creek Trail. I used to go hiking with my dad when I was a kid. We would drive in the old 1940 Plymouth up the South Hill, west past the bush farms, the stands of alder and second growth fir, past the dying coal towns along the Carbon River, into the national forests and up to the Ipsit Creek trailhead. At the trailhead, a wooden sign, Ipsit Pass 3.9 miles, Mowich Lake 5.2 miles. We went up that trail many times, up the creek valley, through the evergreen forest, the overcast turning to drizzle and then rain. And when the rain got too heavy, we gave up and went back down. Only once did we get as far as Ipsit Pass, Mowich Lake down there below us, but obscured by cloud and rain. There's a road into Mowich Lake now. I think I will drive there one day, take the short hike up to the pass, and then perhaps drop again into the cloud and mist, through the timeless forest, the creek swelling as I descend, the overcast breaking. This is another one from my, it's memories from my childhood, and I've thought about memory lately and how when things pass out of living memory that, you know, they're lost. They've disappeared forever unless somebody has written it down somewhere, but mostly that doesn't happen. And this is a particular memory that I share with, oh, maybe five or six other people in this world. And we're all pretty old, and soon it will be gone too. It's titled 1206 South Meridian. Meridian being State Highway 161 that ran through the center of town and up the South Hill with the house on the west side, a two-story box with covered porch, chairs, swing, the hanging birdhouse made by old man Lavacek in 1940. The kitchen opening off the porch, dining room with the oil heater, the dark wood-pillared parlor where the grown-ups played pinochle, and upstairs the bedrooms eight children had passed through, two girls who died young and the rest married and gone, where I sometimes slept over in flannel sheets and patchwork quilts, the Blessed Virgin praying above my head, and Grandpa's snores rising up from below. Beside the house, the wooden garage, door hanging and catching on the grass, that held the faded brown 38 Dodge sedan. And in between the driveway, grass growing up through gravel, that ran back past the garden with the rows of red poppies, and past the chicken yard, the winery with its rich, heady smell, down to the barn and under the hayloft where I would sneak a smoke sometimes, past the bulb shed and out into the field with the green shoots of iris in the spring, blooming purple in summer, where in September we parked cars for the fairgrounds next door, where Grandpa rolled the tractor and broke his hip, then slid into strokes and senility and died, and Grandma a couple of years later, and my uncle got the farm and sold it to the fairgrounds, and the state took some for a freeway, and everything was leveled, the field and barn paved and built over, the shards and splinters of the house buried beneath an on-ramp, where now the city clerk says there is no such address, no survey, no records at all. And for something completely different. I had a bit of a rough patch when I was a teenager. And I did some stupid things like a lot of teenagers do. This is kind of a special classification of that. It's the kind of thing that just makes me cringe when I think about it today. But there it was, and it happened, so this is it. It's called Boys with Guns. A summer day long ago, just out of high school, the four of us, in Don Hollert's Chevy pickup, out shooting birds for the hell of it, down a bush track in low gear, three of us in the back with our 22s, blasting away at everything in the trees. My eye was sharp, my gun sighted in, and I killed 17 that day. It was all great fun, with much jibing and boasting, and no thought of nestlings left to starve. Afterward, we scored some beer and hit the beach for the afternoon. So... All right, well, after the downer. as Richard said, I moved to Canada in 1970. I got a job in the oil patch and stayed here ever since. And, you know, I continued to enjoy, you know, canoeing and hiking and that sort of thing. This is a canoeing poem. It's called South Saskatchewan. Our third day on the river. 12 miles since breakfast, no other human presence. The antelope and deer we pass, more numerous than all our spoken words. Prairie hills rise above us, their springtime green bleaching to brown. The day's heat builds slowly. Cottonwood fluff floats over the water, swirls in the wake of my paddle. Dip. Thrust, J-stroke, return, drops fall, flashing from the blade. Dip, thrust, the rhythm, sealed in my flesh by 40 years of repetition. Down the slow and sun-bright river, as the journey nears its end, around the next long bend, or the bend after, a campground, a truck waiting to carry us home. And another one in that vein, this, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Majorville Medicine Wheel, but it's fairly famous in archaeological circles. It's in southeastern Alberta, out in the middle of nowhere, but it's about a mile from the Bow River, and I've found the best way to get there is by canoe. You come down the river, you put up your tent, and then you go up and look at the medicine wheel. So this particular time, it was just a couple of days after the summer solstice, and I thought it would be appropriate to go up there and watch the sunrise. My partner in the venture didn't think that was such a good idea, so I went up by myself. This is called Medicine Wheel, June 23rd, 2013. I come awake at 4:30 and dress quietly in the tent. Outside, the mosquitoes are still active. I walk quickly, swatting them away, through the scrub and cactus and up the long ridge, then the hill, shaped vaguely like the Matterhorn. The wheel is on the high point, the altar in this cathedral of space, visibility 30 miles in every direction. A half-burned twist of sweetgrass lies on the cairn. I should offer something, but I have come empty-handed. So I pour some water on the stones. It's a thirsty land. There's a sense of something old, slumbering, but benevolent. A residue of the psychic energy channeled through this place over 5,000 years. The eastern sky grows brighter, and the sun cracks the horizon about 5:15. My wife and I bought a house in the Charleswood area of Calgary, and we lived there for the next 46 years, raised our family there. And a lot of the poetry in this deck is, you know, influenced by that house in one way or another. This particular poem, well, when we bought the house, there was a deck attached to the back, but it was a little bit rickety, and it was starting to get rotten. And so I patched it for a while, and eventually built a new deck. And this poem is called The Deck. The flower boxes on the deck are newly planted with geraniums and alyssum. The boxes built in when I replaced the old deck in 1991. Dad was visiting that summer and helped me build it. He was 77 then, and limited by arthritic hands, but he could help with the cutting and handling the planks, and with the wisdom of a lifetime do-it-yourselfer, not yet diminished by dementia. We built it solid, the way he always had, a framework of spruce joists set on concrete pilings, bolted to the foundation, finished with 2x6 hardwood cedar, and everything square, plumb, and level, his mark and presence in the bones of it. For the precision cutting, we borrowed Hans Bielenstein's radial arm saw. Hans was particular about the saw, which he'd owned for a long time, and we had to clear out a space in the garden shed for it. He was dealing with cancer and was in and out of hospital that summer. On one of his good days, he came to check out what we were doing. I can still see him coming down the back steps with his cane, a big grin on his face, just happy to be out in the real world for a while. Hans died in early November, after the deck was finished and the saw returned. There's a memorial bench for him in Confederation Park, between a grove of spruce trees and the duck pond. I go there sometimes and remember him. I've never found a way to keep the boxes dry when they're full of earth, and they're slowly rotting from the inside. They still look good on the outside, but one day they will have to be rebuilt, either by myself or a new owner. A small price, I think, for all those years of flowers. Another one in that milieu. I always like it in the spring when the ice starts to melt and you start to see water running down the streets. And I can never resist the temptation to go out and help it along. This poem is called March Melt. I swing the rusty pick, chop street ice, trench along the curb, around my illegal ramp. We built the first ones maybe 30 years ago, a neighborhood project. too cheap to pay for city curb cuts. We rented a mixer, drank some beer, and poured five in an afternoon. And bylaws be damned. And they served until the city took them out when they repaved the street. This one I did on my own. 13 sacks of premix, shoveled from a wheelbarrow. It's showing some cracks now, but I think it will last long enough. Water follows the trench in a thin, muddy stream, and another winter trickles away. One of the best parts about that place, for me anyway, was, all the stuff we had growing in the backyard. And we had an apple tree and a crab apple tree and a couple of small cherry trees. And I guess my favorite was out behind the fence along the alley where I had my raspberry patch. And, this poem is called Raspberries. It's a record crop for my patch in the alley. Canes flop over the wires, lie full of fruit, two and three deep. Half an hour to pick a 5-meter row. More in a picking than we eat in a week. Enough in the freezer to last for months. But let some alley dog walker pause to pick a few, and my hackles go up like I'll starve without them. And one more backyard plant. This one's called Wolf Willow. I've always loved wolf willows. Their bright gray-green foliage, the heady sweetness of their blossoms at the beginning of summer. A few years back, we landscaped the backyard and planted one there. It didn't do well where we put it. So after a couple of seasons, I moved it out behind the fence along the alley next to the raspberries. It was happier there and grew tall and sent its roots out through the thin, gravelly soil where the new shoots sprouted up from them. And when I cut them off with a mower, they just kept coming back. I knew that if they were left alone, they would turn the alley into a thicket of wolf willow. And the thought of it pleased me. There's a kind of immortality in them, a clonal whole that lives on while the single stems die. This summer, our last in this place, bloomed for the first time ever, its tiny yellow flowers perfuming the alley. Now, I worked in the oil patch for 32 years, and for all that time, I've only got one poem to show for it, and maybe there's a message in that, I'm not sure. But this is one, the title of it is Retirement Party. By then, I had been there for 17 years. 11 as chief engineer, and it was good, almost all of it. When I went to my office to hang up my coat, somebody else had moved in. The party was well attended. The VP said nice things about me. They gave me a painting, a cross-country ski scene. No skier, just a set of tracks disappearing into the bush. And eventually we decided it was time to move out of the place, getting tired of doing yard work and all the housework and stuff. So we went about the process of downsizing, because in 46 years you accumulate a lot of stuff. And I was inspired to write a few poems about the downsizing process, which I won't read all of. but this is one of them. It's called Baby Shoes. The laces are set in the last loose bows my mother tied the day she took them to be bronzed. The metal is flaking from the laces, but still smooth on the shoes, glued to a pair of bookends. They are useless, really, too small and too light and slippery to hold up more than three paperbacks. A modest trophy for a firstborn's early steps into a world consumed in war, and holding still his parents' hopes that his life would turn out well. Late in that life, those hopes mainly fulfilled, I'm ready to let them go. Not to goodwill or a garage sale, shorn of provenance and meaning, but to the anonymous dignity of the landfill. This is a different kind of downsizing poem. Like I said, I grew up in the U.S., and you're probably all aware of the nutty gun culture that they have down there with its, you know, its fascist overtones and all that. When I was young, I was actually into that for a few years. And this is about some of the residue. This poem is called Stahlhelm, which is German for steel helmet. The steel helmet fits snugly on my head, a standard issue Wehrmacht coal scuttle. Its leather headband stained with soldier sweat. I bought it by mail order back in the 60s, the same way I bought the guns I kept in the closet. I like the menacing cachet of the helmet, the feel of the guns in my hands, their heft and brute functionality, the nihilistic cool of it all. That was all long ago, the guns 30 years gone, and only the helmet left, half forgotten in a basement cupboard. I will set it out in the garden when spring comes, filled and seeded, and in our last summer here, let it bloom, bursting out and flowing over with nasturtiums, orange and bright. And the last downsizing poem, it's called Canoe. There's no room for it at the new place. And anyway, I'm getting too damned old. I can still swing a paddle, but the next time I dump, I might not have the strength to make it out of the river. And that's not how I want to end. Out on the lawn, away from the fence, scrub free of dirt and tree droppings, old patches repaired, it still looks pretty good. The bright lime green hardly faded. It's almost 40 years old, paddled all over Alberta and Saskatchewan, wrecked twice and patched up again, scarred but still watertight. 3 years now since it's been in the water. Maybe somebody will take it all the way down the Peace and the Mackenzie. I always wanted to do that. So in the end, we sold the place, and we moved into a old villa-style condo in Varsity Acres. And it's very nice there. There are lots of good people, and you know, we're happy there. But I do miss my yard. And this poem is called Our New Yard. There isn't much to it. A 1 meter strip around the building, bounded by landscape lumber, filled with crushed red shale. Even there, restrictions. Plants in pots only, nothing planted in the ground. Too bad. There are a couple of spots where raspberries would do well. And they don't mind gravel. Anyway, I think maintenance sprays the shale in order to keep the weeds down. Outside my office window, a single stalk of quackgrass hugs the basement wall, its top leaves peeking over the sill. I watch a black ant pick its way across the rocks, like a little robot rover on the surface of Mars. And I will close the reading with the last poem. When we moved out of the house, I kind of had a list of all the things I was going to give the new owner helpful advice about. But he never asked for my advice. So I wrote this poem instead. It's called Letter to the New Owners. I've been like the man who built a sailboat in his basement. I hope you can use the workbench I left in the laundry room. The trunk of the poplar tree will break the garden shed if you don't shave it back every couple of years. This knowledge cost me a garden shed. A bird feeder in the low branch of the poplar will let you watch the birds from the kitchen. Make it squirrel proof. They can clean it out in a hurry. And the mice will come out from under the deck and scavenge the fallen seed. But don't worry, they never got into the house. And the neighborhood cats will come to hunt the mice and the birds. A bylaw violation, but I like to watch them. I put screens over the eaves troughs, except for the high roof in the front. My wife wouldn't let me up there anymore. The unused screens are in the garage. Along the back fence, you'll find raspberries. I babied those canes for 40 years, and they always produced for me. Please take care of them. All right, thank you. Thank you for coming. Yeah. So there's wine and there's nibblies back there. Please feel free to indulge yourself.
And books, I think.
Well, yes, books too. As it happens, I brought along some copies of the book.
And
if you're moved to buy one, Robin will. Sarah will assist you in that manner, and I'd be pleased to sign them too if you want that.
Sure.
And, of course, Sarah will also be pleased if you're moved to buy one of the books on the shelf here. So I'll leave you at that, and thank you again for coming. And, well, I guess I'll just sit here for a minute and see if anybody wants a book signed.
This is premature.